Hello everyone, welcome to Hear the World. My name is Asaf Ophir and this is episode 4. I'm going to be speaking with Rabbi Meira Ilyinsky, and she is in San Francisco. She works at an elderly home. Hello, Meira.
Hello, Asaf.
How are you?
Oh, you know, that's a deep question these days. I'm good. I'm very good, actually. Yeah.
Well, that's great. What is it like in your own home? What kind of, like, how are you keeping things going?
Well, I have two cats for company, for roommates. And they have needs. So that sets a structure there. I'm working from home. I've noticed that my dining table has moved to in front of my computer. I don't know when I'll be eating at a dining table with anybody.
Yeah, wow. When was the last time? Do you remember?
Well, I'm going to look at my calendar here, but I have been essentially in my apartment since March 9th.
Wow.
So that's almost 2 months.
Wow. And you're getting food delivered?
Yeah. Some by the neighbors upstairs, some by a friend, and then some by delivery business services. Mm. Yeah.
Okay. I'm curious, and I mean, we've talked before and you've told me a little bit about how you became a rabbi. If you would like, I'd love to hear a little bit, just a bit about how that happened. It happened later on in your life, right?
Yeah, I started rabbinical school when I was 52. You say a little bit. I could speak with you for 2 hours about this. And you reach a certain point in life where instead of looking forward about what I want to do, what I want to become, what I want to accomplish, you realize at a certain point you're over a hump and you turn around and look back. And when I look back, this is something that's been forming for a very long time. When I was starting my senior year in high school, there were like 5 or 6 Jewish kids in my senior class in Ossining High School, senior class of like, I don't know, 150 or something like that. And the local rabbi called each of us Jewish kids. So he called each one of us. I was picked up the phone in my mother's bedroom. I was upstairs in our house. And he said, "Hello, I'm Rabbi Gelbart, and I wanted to invite you and the other Jewish students to come meet with me once a week during your senior year, and then we'll have a little celebration at the end of the year." And I said to him, "I don't really want to do that. My family isn't religious. We don't believe in God. And, you know, that's just not really something I want to do." And he said, "Well, if you think of yourself as an open-minded person, you might want to consider what you're discarding before you throw it out." Well, being an open-minded person was a big thing back then. And he caught each one of us and we all came.
Wow. He had some talent.
He did. And so we spent probably an hour with him, and he let us talk about what was going on in our lives, you know, parents complaining about parents, dating, whatever. And then he'd spend the last 15 minutes and give us the Jewish point of view on whatever it was that concerned us. And to this day, I remember two things that he taught us. Now I'm talking about, I'm 74 now, and this is when I was 17. So it's a long, long time ago. So one thing he said was, I was having a lot of trouble with my mother, you know, in the rebellious age of 17. And he said, well, you know, the Torah says that you don't have to love your parents, but you have to honor them. And it was like a lightning bolt in my head. I don't have to love my mother, you know. I can find ways to get along without having to do that. The good news is, as the years went on, I came to love her dearly, but at that time, not so much. And the other thing he told us, we were talking about, we must have been talking about dating and sex and stuff. And he said to us, you know, the reason that you are careful with who you engage with in sex is not because it's dirty, but because it's holy. And that was something nobody was saying to us at all. That was really incredibly amazing. So he was very influential. After I was married and had my first child, I was living next door to a couple who also had a child of the same age, and our kids played together. And she was very active in a Jewish renewal group in Portland, Oregon. And I started getting really curious. But I had this thing that I now call Jewish shame, where you know that you're part of this people, but you don't know anything about what they're doing. It was foreign to me. And it's embarrassing to be so ignorant of something that is yours. And I did eventually start going to services that were held in the Unitarian Church. It was a Jewish group, but it wasn't held in the Unitarian Church. And thank goodness the rabbi was very kind and understanding. And he said to me, you know, there are a lot of people who have a history similar to yours, where the grandparents left Eastern Europe at a time of great upheaval, and they came to the U.S., and a lot of the religion was the way of living. It wasn't just it. Religion's like a bad translation of what Judaism is. But the way of living got dissipated. And so that was Rabbi Joey Wolf in Portland, Oregon. And that was also incredibly helpful, that he was so understanding of my, it wasn't just me, it was a whole historical layer of people. And that was really helpful to me. Eventually I became the adult education chairperson at our synagogue and was teaching a lot of bar and bat mitzvah kids. And one adult in the synagogue had a bat mitzvah. And I thought, wow, you know, I would like to do that. I mean, this, I'm talking about years and years moving.
Right. On. So I'm just going to jump in because some people might not have a full sense of how a bat mitzvah or bar mitzvah works. It's usually something we do at age 13 or sometimes 12. It's a coming of age ceremony. So doing it as an adult can be a big deal for people. It basically means someone who never did it when they were coming of age at 12 or 13 in their adult life, they suddenly decided something that they would want to still do. And so they do it at a later age, right?
Yes. And it's, you know, back then it was a relatively new thing for women to do that. So women who never did do it at 13, some began doing it at an older age.
Hmm.
So, I was about 45 when I did my bat mitzvah, and it was the most moving day of my life. And and by this time, you know, many years of, well, I've given you a sweep from age 17 to 45. And then I loved it so much. And then I thought, this idea came into my mind, you know, maybe you could do this, you could concentrate your life on this, maybe you could be a rabbi.
Cool. Well, congratulations, I can say.
Thank you.
Yeah. And today you work with old people, right?
I do. I work in a lovely Jewish assisted living center where I lead services and do pastoral care, talking with people about what's important to lift their spirit. But I've also been revising the prayer book there. I do artwork. And now we're in this pandemic, and I can't even go there. They're not allowing any visit, not even family is allowed to go in. They're the most vulnerable population, people in their 80s and 90s and 100s. So I've been making YouTube videos of the Friday service.
I'm curious, you know, because you're working with people who are considered, you know, really in the danger category of the virus, do you have any sense of how it's going there in this home that you work, the people that you work with?
You know, actually, I feel really cut off. I mean, I speak or email with a few of them, some of them who don't really use computers, whatever. I send cards to, one of them sent me a card back, which was so sweet. So I get a point of view from one or two, you know, from whoever I'm speaking with. But I don't have a big sense of all of what's going on. They can't eat in a dining room. They get their meals delivered 3 times a day. They can't do, all group activities have been canceled, but they are doing iPad video chats with families. I mean, they're going to each person and helping out, and they're trying to get an internal television system organized. And I was thinking the other day, I was thinking about my own self, you know, how we thought, well, it was going to be 2 weeks, we'll be inside. Well, maybe a month. Well, now 2 months have gone by and it's going to be another month. And I'm thinking it, for older people, it might be years that you know, until there's herd immunity or a vaccine. And for some of these very old people, it might mean the rest of their lives. And that's very painful to me.
Mm-hmm.
And one person I know said, you know, he would rather not live his remaining years like that. He'd rather go out and take his chances of getting, and he was a doctor, getting the disease rather than just sit in his room.
Wow.
And they want, here's something that I've come across. People want to feel that they have a contribution to make, that they're doing something that's valuable to someone else or society at large. And when they can't even leave their rooms or they can't have a discussion with someone, a few of them are married but and have a partner living with them, but many of them are single, that's very painful to them.
Yeah.
They feel like they're consumers or having to be taken, you know, meals brought to them and they can't, what can they give back?
Yeah. Wow. Is there anything that helps them that you find?
I write a letter to them every week that gets delivered with their breakfast on Friday. Mm-hmm. And I try and pull something out of our Torah portion or about our texts that puts a light on what's happening. With Passover, we've left slavery in Egypt and we're wandering in the desert, getting ready to get the slavery out of our system and getting clear enough so that we're able to receive the teaching of God on Mount Sinai. And so it's a very in-between time, a time with a little bit of trepidation. So I likened what we're actually going through right now, today in the world, with that journey for them. And I try and give them a hope or a bigger picture in my writing so that they can place, it's what I call walking into the Jewish paradigm, where you can see what's going on in your life as part of a bigger story that has gone on to your people before, and they've made it through, and you will as well. Or there's they have some meaning in it, even though it feels very confusing at the time.
That sounds great. That sounds wonderful. I mean, as much as one can find some solace, you know, in what's going on, it's actually a good moment to move to something that I was looking forward to asking. Again, if you're comfortable with it, but if you were to meet someone who was not Jewish and who had never heard of Judaism at all and had no idea what it was, and you had to sum it up. I mean, there's actually a famous Jewish story about Rabbi Hillel having to sum it all up. But if you had to sum Judaism up in three words.
Three words.
Would you have three words for us?
Oh my, three words. Empathy, responsibility, and awe.
Wow. I wonder if you would like to explain what made you choose that.
Okay. The defining story, the Torah, the five books of Moses, Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy, is the base of our texts. We're known as the people of the book. And the in the Torah, the defining moment is breaking free from being slaves in Egypt and giving us a chance to have self-determination or, you know, worship our God instead of the Egyptian way of life. And the constant refrain in the Torah is, you shall not oppress the stranger because you know the heart of the stranger because you were strangers in the land of Egypt. So the constant refrain is empathy. Put yourself in the other person's position. And not only will you know what they feel like, but it's your responsibility to assist them and to not oppress them. So I said empathy, responsibility.
Yeah.
Responsibility to what we call taking on the yoke of Torah, to say, okay, I'm going to study the way one should walk, and then I'm going to walk it. That's the responsibility. And the third thing was awe, which is, you know, it's something that's so present that we don't notice it. The world we live in is so full of amazing things. I woke up in the middle of the night the other night and I heard a great horned owl.
Oh. Just next to your house?
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, I heard it once before in the 10 years I've lived here.
Wow.
But just, you know, we are on a unique planet. We're these unique beings that are unique animals that are have this consciousness that we know someday we're going to die. And it's confusing and worrisome. Well, what are we supposed to do in that case? And I think Judaism is one of the structures that says, here, this is what you're supposed to do. This is the wisdom we've accumulated over the ages of how to live a meaningful and peaceful life, and one that your duty is to help make things better, to help repair the rips in the world. And awe, which is another way of saying the acknowledgement of God, if you will, or something way beyond human creation, has a hand in this world. And it's important to wake ourselves up to that, to realize that what grandeur we are a part of. And to have gratitude. So that's what I would say. Judaism is in three words.
Wow. Thank you so much. That's great. Thank you. Well, I'd like to kind of skip to, although you've been saying many things about coronavirus, I would love to ask if you have any other wisdom coming from Judaism or coming from your experience as a rabbi or in any way coming from your point of view, any insight that you might share with anyone, you know, maybe not necessarily with Jewish people, but with just anyone who is curious to see what Judaism might have to say or what you, Meira, might have to say.
Well, I'll speak as Meira informed with a Jewish point of view, okay?
Sounds great.
So, you know, the timing of this COVID-19 phenomenon, this pandemic, which kind of hit us in full force right around, well, the beginning of force around Passover time. And it's been called a plague, and we can't help but think of the plagues that were God's instrument to help Pharaoh release the Jewish slaves. The Israelite slaves, I shouldn't say. They weren't Jews back then. They were Israelites. And so much has happened. So much has happened. Terrible, horrible death and illness. It's not a nice sickness and not a peaceful way to die, to feel like you can't breathe, that you're drowning in your own breath. And the horror of it, and is awe-inspiring. And also the things that have changed like that because of it makes me think of miracles, okay? Maybe it's a good idea that everybody has health insurance. Maybe it's a good idea that we share resources. Maybe it's a good idea to get people living on the street housed really quickly. Maybe it's a good idea that everybody can vote by mail. I mean, that people have unemployment insurance, that we shouldn't have any workers that are not covered by that. Maybe it's a good idea not to drive so much and lower the Earth's emissions. When this first started happening, I was driving in a car with my rabbi, Katie Mizrahi, on our way to a Beit Din, to a conversion. And I said to her, you know, viruses, like, what's their thing? You know, they're not even alive, like, being. What, they're just infecting other things. What's their point? You know, as though they had a point. And she said to me, the Earth is trying to balance itself. And I said, oh, yeah, and the thing that's putting the Earth the most out of balance are people. And all of a sudden, you know, carbon emissions have gone down. I mean, these are not brilliant things that other people have not thought of. Lots of people have thought of this. But when I think about, I cannot think of any other thing that would create such change so quickly. And it's terrifying and awesome. In Judaism, that word awe, yirah, has the quality of being terrifying in the way that makes the hair stand up on the back of your neck, but also the quality of something being so impressive that you must acknowledge it. Yeah. Hmm. So I don't know, you know, we'll see. Hopefully we will learn better practices that come out of this.
Amen.
Amen.
There's one more question that kind of came up in my mind as you were speaking. I'm curious what you might have to say, if you want to say anything about it, because a lot of the things that you were saying were coming from the point of view of Judaism, and some of them, either directly or as an undertone, were coming from the point of view of a certain sense of a higher power. And I wonder if you would have anything, any kind of advice to say to people who at this point aren't interested in a higher power, or, you know, don't see it that way. You know, maybe I'm kind of taking you back to your 17-year-old self. But, you know, now you're in the rabbi's chair. And do you have anything that you would say to someone who's coming from that point of view?
Sure. The word God is very difficult because, again, it's this baggage-laden word. And I think that's the biggest problem. And what I would say is, don't accept anybody else's definition of God. Don't go with somebody saying it's an old man in the sky making judgments, okay? But God, the idea of there being something else besides human culture. But what I would say is come to your own understanding by your own moments of awe, by your own times when you felt in despair and something came along and lifted you out. I call those people or things that come along, I call them angels or miracles. They're little angels, little miracles. One of my favorite stories is I had a friend who I met in Israel, and he was having a very bad day one day. And he was standing on the street, and the street light changed, and he could walk, and he started walking across the street, and the man coming from the other side put his hand on my friend's arm, and he said, "It's going to get better." And my friend felt like, oh my God, somebody acknowledged me. Somebody saw my despair and comforted me. And I call that an angel, okay? All of us can be angels. All of us are angels, and often we don't even know it. Because God is about relationship. God is about relationship and about realizing that there is some kind of presence there, whether you're aware of it or not, that is benevolent.
Well, I feel your benevolence talking, and it's beautiful. Thank you so much. I really want to say from the bottom of my heart, thanks so much. I love speaking with you, and it's wonderful to hear what you have to say.
Thank you so much, Asaf. It's an honor that you asked me to speak with you.
It's a pleasure. So everyone, thank you for listening. And I am going to play a piece of music that is pretty well known and quite popular among European Jews or any Jews of that descent. It's called Papyrusen. Thank you. So that was me playing Papi Rosen, and I hope you enjoyed it. I hope you enjoyed the episode, and I will see you next week. This is Hear the World. My name is Asaf Ophir, and everybody have a wonderful day. Bye.